Mountain State Mysteries contains adult content that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Mark Covey.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case we have for you today is about two co-workers who were found stabbed to death at a mall in Virginia in November of 1996. This is the case of Cheryl Edwards and Charlita Singleton. Charlita was born in Richmond, Virginia, but she mostly grew up in Delaware. After high school, Charlita went to complete several business courses as a step into her new life. She married a man named David in Delaware in 1978, and the two went to have six kids together, three boys and three girls. In 1988, 8 years before the murders, Charlita and her family moved back to Richmond. David said that Charlita had a passion for jazz and running. He also said that she was a lot of fun to be around. David and Charlita were in the middle of renovating their home into their dream home. Despite the amount of effort it took to be involved in such a big project like that, they somehow managed to do it while raising their six kids and both managing a full-time job. Charlita was the assistant manager of All for One, a dollar store at the Cloverleaf Mall. It was at this dollar store where Charlita would meet Cheryl Edwards.
Cheryl was a cashier at All for One and a school crossing guard. The two jobs were a must for her. She was supporting herself and her son. With our research, we noticed that little is known about Cheryl's life, but we do know she lived near Richmond, not too far from the All for One. It's said that she was a great mother and that she was actually close with her mother, who would watch her son while he wasn't in school.
From our research, we aren't sure what the relationship was like, but we take it that Charlita and Cheryl were strictly co-workers. We have heard they had a really good working relationship. The Cloverleaf Mall opened in 1972, and it was the first regional mall in the area. It has stores like JCPenney's. I know I could name off so many other stores, and it would be a walk down memory lane for people. Like most malls, the atmosphere started to go downhill. There was a major shoplifting problem, drug and alcohol violations, auto thefts. Most of the trouble seemed to come from teens who would hang out and end up causing the trouble. So the mall amped up patrol in the area. Off-duty police officers were hired to patrol the parking lots, and in all honesty, management felt like they were seeing an improvement.
On November 7th, 1996, Charlita and Cheryl were scheduled to work the closing shift. The store closed at 9 p.m., but they did the closing duties. They left the store around 10 p.m. That night, Cheryl's mom, Robin, was watching her son. Robin actually lived in a retirement community, and he was staying with her until Cheryl came to pick him up. By 11:30, Robin began to grow concerned. Robin, along with one of Cheryl's brothers, headed to the mall to see if they could find Cheryl. When they got to the mall, it was around midnight. They both saw Cheryl's Pontiac Grand Prix in the parking lot. Charlita's car was parked right next to Cheryl's. Robin thought that maybe they were just in the store doing inventory. She thought that maybe she just forgot to tell her. So what her and her son did was walk to the back of the mall to the security door and explain what was going on to the officer who was working. The officer let them inside and they all walked to the All for One store. They all saw that the gate was down in front of the store. It's one of those gates that every mall has. It comes down from the ceiling, but you can still see through it. They saw that every light in the store was on, but one in the back of the store. The store was eerily quiet, so Robin called out for Cheryl, but she was met with silence.
After waiting for a couple of hours, Robin called other family members to come to the mall so they could help search for Cheryl. They would even search a wooded area near the mall. Her family even went to a nearby nightclub to see if she was there. When they found out she wasn't there, around 4 a.m., they went back to the mall and called the police to report the situation. Around the time they contacted the police, Charlita's husband David arrived. From our research, it sounded like David fell asleep and woke up in the middle of the night and realized that Charlita never made it home, which caused him to drive to the mall. Once police made it to the scene, Robin, David, and a Chesterfield police officer walked together to the rear door of the All for One store. When they got to the door, they realized that it was unlocked. When the officer opened the door to walk inside, David caught a glimpse of disorder. When the officer stepped back out after a few minutes inside, he told Robin and David that everything was okay. Charlita and Cheryl weren't inside. He basically encouraged them both to go home. Robin and David found out later that Cheryl and Charlita were inside and that they'd both been murdered. Do you find yourself searching for a true crime podcast focused on West Virginia? Well, I have you covered. I'm Mark Covey, the host and creator of Mountain State Mysteries, where every Friday, my co-host Courtney and I tell you about one of West Virginia's coldest unsolved cases. Tune into Mountain State Mysteries on your favorite podcast platform. Both Charlita and Cheryl sustained more than 10 stab wounds and cuts to their neck, chest, back, and head. However, the exact number of wounds has never been shared. They both had wounds on their hands and arms, showing that they fought their attacker, which is natural to do. You're going to defend yourself when someone is attacking you. Police said they were stabbed with a knife, but never said what type of knife it was. It was apparent to police that a struggle took place. The store safe was found open. It was missing between $1,000 to $1,500. Other than the cash, the murderer took nothing from the women. Their wallets, checkbooks, and jewelry were all left behind. It's never been made clear if robbery was the killer's primary motive.
The police actually pointed out that the murders, in particular, that the fact that Cheryl and Charlita were stabbed multiple times, which sometimes indicates there is a personal motive, but it also shows that the killer could have been scared and wanted to make sure the two were dead. The police actually explored a few possibilities of how the killer could have gotten into the store. They did learn that the rear door was double bolted and you needed a key to both open and close the door. None of the keys were missing and there was no key left in the lock. Since Charlita was the assistant manager, she was more than likely had the keys on her or would have been responsible for them.
The police said there was no signs of forced entry, which the killer could have used intimidation to get in the store. Police thought it was more than likely that the killer approached the women as they were leaving out the back door. It's also possible that one of the women let the killer in, but given the time of night, it's honestly unlikely they would have opened the door for anyone unless they were expecting that person. So one of the possible clues that police couldn't make sense of was a spilled 28-ounce bottle of Parsons ammonia. Police actually found the ammonia in the hallway between the back door and the office where the women were murdered. They found out that the Parsons brand ammonia wasn't sold at any of the stores in the mall and that the mall's cleaning staff didn't use it in that ounce. So police focused on this detail for a while. They sent out a nationwide notice asking if anyone had seen this type of ammonia or something like it at a crime scene, but this lead was a dead end. They were never able to connect the ammonia to another crime scene.
At the time of the murders, the Cloverleaf Mall was equipped with various surveillance cameras. The police reviewed the footage to identify anyone who was seen walking or driving in the parking lot around the time of the murders. However, there was no direct view of the rear door to the All for One store. Police were actually able to track down a lot of the people that they saw in the footage. They said it was unbelievable how many people they actually identified, but after meeting with each person, none of them seemed to be the suspect. Out of everyone they were able to track down, there was one man who wanted to be questioned as a possible witness.
In an article from the Richmond Daily Times Dispatch, it said that there was a composite sketch that was developed and sent out shortly after the murders. Court, I put the sketch in your document. Can you describe it for everyone listening?
So it shows a white male with dark hair and eyes. His eyebrows are pretty close together, kind of forming a unibrow. His nose is pretty large. He don't have a top lip, and he has a really bad receding hairline.
Oh, he does. His hair, like, really swoops down.
It's like his eye is, like, the way the picture's showing, like...
His eyes are kind of...
It would be his right eye if you saw him in person. It's, like, different than his left eye.
Yeah, like the left eye is sloped a little.
Yeah.
So the sketch is pretty detailed. How could someone talk about a unibrow if they didn't get a good look at this man? But yet again, we aren't sure if this man had anything to do with the murders or not. There was a camera in the All for One store that was actually in a prime spot. It actually faced the hallway, so the killer could have been caught on camera. However, the tape in the camera hadn't been changed in like a month, and the hallway lights were off.
The investigation led to a lot of dead ends. Investigators attempted to recreate what might have happened. They even played out every scenario. They sat in the parking lot after the mall closed to get a sense of what the area was like at that hour. They wanted to know any kind of activity could have been expected. Despite all of their efforts, they made little to no headway. At times, they actually wondered if the killer was from out of town. The mall was so close to the interstate, so it makes sense that someone could have gotten off of the interstate, committed the murders, and then hopped back on.
Do you find yourself searching for a true crime podcast focused on West Virginia? Well, I have you covered. I'm Mark Covey, the host and creator of Mountain State Mysteries, where every Friday, my co-host Courtney and I tell you about one of West Virginia's coldest unsolved cases. Tune into Mountain State Mysteries on your favorite podcast platform. Lieutenant Andy Scruggs told the Richmond Daily Times Dispatch in 1997 that they considered the killer, quote, could have been someone passing through, looking for money, and happened to see two people coming out of the store at night. And God knows where they are now. Why did he have to kill them both? I don't know. Especially if it's a drifter. What are the chances of him getting caught if he doesn't stay in the area? End quote. I mean, does this make any sense? Kinda. To me, the killer would have to be super close to the back door to even know where the back door was. I mean, even at our local mall, I barely know where the back doors are at the mall. Like, I just drive by and I don't pay any attention. But with this being unplanned, if the person was from out of town or not, they would have to know how this worked. They would have had to be walking around that part of the mall.
Both families worked to get more attention on the murders. Along with police, they approached various programs, Unsolved Mysteries, America's Most Wanted, just to have their murders featured in an episode, but they were unsuccessful. And that's really disappointing because we both know how hard it is to get coverage on a case, especially one like that. It just seems to be so cold at the time. The investigation turned into an examination of Charlita and Cheryl's backgrounds. They wanted to see if someone wanted to kill one of the women and disguise it as robbery.
Like, this had to be explored. Just like any other case, you'd want to investigate that theory. But with how brutal the murders were, it seemed like it was necessary to learn if there was anyone in either of their lives who had motive to kill them. Basically, the further investigations got, the clearer it became that no one was out to get them. Cheryl and Charlita both lived pretty normal lives, going to work, spending time with their families, taking care of their children, none of which included developing enemies.
Neither Charlita or Cheryl mentioned having any issues whatsoever with customers. No threats or really anything like that. There was basically no warning signs coming from them that someone could be casing the store at any point before the murders. Which this doesn't mean someone could have been doing that without causing any attention to themselves.
So, I kind of want to backtrack to the robbery motive. So, from what I can tell from my research, a lot of the employees at the mall were kind of shocked. And they honestly wondered why someone would target the dollar store out of all the stores in the mall. Like, this was a store where if you bought 5 items, you'd be paying $5 and some sale tax. It's not like you're at JCPenney's buying a dress or a suit, spending hundreds of dollars. So it's been hard to figure out why someone would rob and kill 2 women for $1,000 to $1,500 when you could have got more from any other store. Some even wonder if the killer could have been a former employee at the All For One store who was familiar with the store and knew where everything in the back was. And they could have been familiar with Charlita or even Cheryl.
For instance, think of Cheryl and Charlita as Nellie Ram for a second. She was killed because she could have confessed and told the cops who killed Ray. So who's to say if Cheryl and Charlita knew the killer that they were only killed because the killer knew they would confess to the cops and the killer would have been caught with the robbery?
During my research, I couldn't find if all of the former employees of the All For One store were investigated. I would like to think they were because this seems like a good possibility to me. To be honest, we aren't 100% sure if the killer was even a male. In all of the articles I've seen, the police just referred to the killer as a he. It also wasn't clear if they thought it was one person or multiple people who committed this crime.
In 2011, the Cloverleaf Mall was demolished. It was already having issues and started to go downhill before the murders. They just added more to the uneasy feeling in customers and employees. You can look at it like the nail in the coffin for the mall.
After the mall was demolished, the site became a combination of stores, restaurants, offices, and apartments, and it's now called the Stonebridge Shopping Center. In 2019, Cheryl's niece, who was 14 at the time of the murder, said, quote, "You can dress it up and make it new, but they'll never forget the tragedy that occurred there," end quote.
As of today, the murders of Cheryl Edwards and Carlita Singleton are still unsolved.
If you or anyone you know has any information on the murders of Charlita Singleton and Cheryl Edwards, please contact the Chesterfield County Police Department at 804-748-1251. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, all at Mountain State Mysteries.
Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com.
For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.